All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get right to it. Let me give you a quick heads up and look through the questions here. Questions are starting to come in pretty heavy right now. So if you want a chance to get through with a question, a comment, a topic, the sooner you press one, the better your chances are going to be. The first hour will be Pittsburgh Power, and we'll be screening for those calls. But if you have a general question, go ahead and press one as well. We'll screen those calls. We'll hold you to the second hour. We're going to do 2 hours today. And I'll keep you updated on where we are on the questions. Let's get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we will get to it. Today is the Power Hour. We will be focusing on engine and performance and fuel mileage and troubleshooting and ECMs and all those things related to keeping your truck running good and keeping a smile on your face going down the road. So joining me today from Pittsburgh Power, we've got Bruce, John, and Ethan. Hey, guys, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Kevin, for having us. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, great to have Kevin. You here. And we've got lots of questions building up already. So anything you guys want to start with before we get to the calls?
Well, we've been doing a lot of work on the ISX with the EGR, DPF, and urea, and I'll let John tell you some of the results that we're getting.
Excellent.
Yeah, with our tuning on that particular engine, the newer one in particular, the CM2250 and 2350, we're consistently getting close to 600 or right around 600 horsepower and just over 2,000 pounds-feet of torque from that engine with all of the emission controls in place. And they seem to be running great. I keep getting texts and even little videos back from some of our customers about running them, of them going up hills at least 20 miles per hour faster than they used to. So it's been kind of fun to work with those guys and actually make drivers with those engines happy.
And wow, Kevin, that's a huge improvement, and I have to believe that we are going to see fuel mileage increases from that as well.
Right. We haven't got any, nobody has gotten back with definite numbers yet, but we've also have zero emissions failures. Zero.
That'll be big.
So far, there will be maintenance involved in that. Our feeling is that you're going to have to maintain some of those systems about every quarter of a million miles, it seems, to keep from having those problems. And with the more efficient tuning, that should increase the length of time in between issues you're going to have with that stuff.
You know, and that's two big things there. One, take care of the problems that we know are rampant on this engine. And two, have an idea, have a plan and a things in place that we know at this time or when this starts happening, here is how we maintain it to keep it working right. And I just haven't seen that. You take it into a shop and nobody knows what you should be doing to keep them running right. And so I think this is two big things. Get it running right and then know when and how we need to service it to keep it running right. And if that's the case, then I could start to get on board with these engines. I've been bashing them for so long, and I keep saying at some point the OEMs will either figure out how to make these things right, just like we did with car emissions, or you know, and I think what we're going to see first is the aftermarket figuring it out like you guys are doing. And once we do, I'm fine. I mean, I'm not totally – I'd love to see really clean burning engines, but I don't want to see it at the expense of the owner-operator the way we have seen it. So it's very exciting to see this kind of progress on really one of the engines that we see the most problems with.
Well, we're going to eliminate those problems.
That's exciting.
Okay.
Good stuff.
Other than that, Kevin,
right.
we don't have a whole lot of new stuff for this week.
Well, that's good because the questions just really piled up this week. So let's get right to them. Let's start off in Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a 2010 DD15, just the DPF only on it. And it's I'm looking to keep this truck for about another 2 years, and I'm probably going to upgrade to a newer DD15. My question, two questions. I want to get a power box for this truck. Okay, would I be able to transfer it over to, like, let's say a 2017 model?
Ethan?
Yeah, on that one, yes. Yes, you should absolutely be able to transfer it over once they come out. It'll
okay.
be just the plug and play.
Awesome. And, well, I'm going to switch to an automated transmission with direct gearing. Well, I have to watch my torque on those transmissions, like, you know, more like a level 3, level 4. I mean, I'm pretty gentle. I'm a 55-mile-an-hour guy to begin with, but I like to maintain my speed up the hill. So I just want to make sure I'm not going to tear up anything.
So long as you're gentle on the rate of acceleration, you'll have zero problems.
Yeah, I drive with my big toe. That's it. That's the only toe that touches my accelerator. So, and I have a Delta P sensor question. I have 632,000 miles, right at 7.85 miles per gallon for the last 30 days pulling flatbed. I noticed my fuel economy has dropped a little bit, and I'm thinking about doing an emission tune-up on my truck because all the dealers just want to replace everything, you know. And I was wondering, the Delta P sensor was the first thing I wanted to service or replace because it's fairly inexpensive. It's like $150, including the pipe. Do you think that would be a good recommendation to start from there and then work my way down to the dozer valve?
Ethan?
That's not a bad plan. You can always take the sensors out and see how clogged up they are. The boost sensor is a big one there. And on the boost sensor, you might be able to just clean it out.
Okay. If the pipe is pretty fouled up, because like I said, it's never been cleaned out of service, is it better? Because they said there's an aftermarket or actually a recall on that part and an upgraded part. So when you do buy the Delta P, you actually get the 12-inch pipe that comes with it. I don't know if I should just go and swap it out or just focus on just pulling the sensor out first, just clean it and go from there.
I'd replace it with the upgraded part there. So there's obviously a reason why the OEMs changed that because they felt it needed it.
Okay, and what's replaced? Is there any up-tuning or anything I need to program on the ECM? It won't affect. I don't need to update anything if I swap out the sensor.
No, it'll be a direct swap there.
That's all I got. Appreciate it. Thank you very much for the show, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Ohio. John, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question for John and Ethan about this newer system that Bruce has been talking about, the DPF. I currently run a truck that came from the factory with the DPF. Will that system be able to replace my factory system that is totally screwed up? Or is this only going to work for non-DPF motors?
John, you've been doing the research why don't you answer that one?
Yes, the manufacturer that I think I've settled in on for this, we're still compiling info and trying to pick a vendor to use for this project to be able to offer the DPFs to our customers who need to go to California. And the one that I'm pretty sure that I'm going to go with does do retrofits for trucks that were already DPF trucks. So you'd be able to update the system on your truck with ours. Or they'll have a direct fit replacement for your stuff there.
Okay, and do you know approximately when you guys think that you might be settled up on this? Would it be by summer?
By summer for sure, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome. Let's, you know what, I think we're going to take this into a break. We don't have enough time to get another call started. Just to let you guys know, that is becoming a very popular question on the show. And I know we talked about maybe getting some survey numbers. We need to get together and do that as well. But we are getting a lot of questions about, you know, DPF, a project with you guys where the older trucks would be able to be retrofitted and go to California. Guys want to build gliders. So I think there's a lot of interest in a solution like that that would work.
Yeah, we're up to about 30 names on the list of folks have called the shop to let me know that they're seriously interested in it right now.
Yeah, that's a big number because this is not, and maybe you guys are getting a little closer to this. Any idea on price range on what this might end up being?
We're still working on that. Some of the units are fairly expensive. So I'd rather not divulge that at the moment. We're still working on trying to make it as inexpensive as possible, but some of the systems involved, some of them actually need their own monitoring systems and so forth, that it gets a little pricey.
Yeah. Got it. All right. Well, we'll keep talking about that. You guys keep working on it, but I did want to let you know it's becoming a very popular question on the show in general. So really excited about that project. I'm going to get to a break. We're going to come back and get to more of your calls and questions. Don't go away. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. The guys from Pittsburgh Power are joining us here, helping out with questions and answers, and we've got lots of them, so we're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to Troy in Seattle. Troy, welcome to the program. Troy, are you with us? Oh, you know what? I'm going to put you back on hold, Troy. We're going to see if we can save that line. It sounds like somebody's there, but let's go to Virginia. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, how y'all doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I got the Pittsburgh Power mufflers, but it's a Detroit 60 series, a DDAC 5, and I've already replaced the Y in the muffler system twice, and I'm just curious if I was to eliminate that Y and just run the straight pipe back from the exhaust to the Pittsburgh muffler, would that help alleviate the back pressure?
Well, first of all, you have two mufflers on there, so you really don't have any back pressure. Is your Y splitting at the Y?
Well, it's rusting out.
Oh, it's rusting out.
Yeah, where the the attachment points are.
Yeah, it shouldn't rust out. Is that are you using an aluminized Y pipe? That should not rust out that fast.
No, it's just that I bought it from Freightliner.
Wow. How many years do you get out of a Y pipe?
About two to three years. Well, three winters anyway, I'll put it that way.
Three winters, right. Well, you've had some pretty good snowfalls this past couple winters, and you've had a lot of salt, possibly mag chloride. I don't know. I would ask them, the Freightliner, do they have an updated version? Or see, go to Grand Rock up by Cleveland and see if they have one and make sure it's aluminized. But I would stay with the wide pipe and stay with the dual exhaust unless you're going to a weed burner.
Okay. Yeah, because that was one of the reasons I was asking, because I heard y'all talking about the weed burners before, and I was thinking, well, maybe I'd just go with a single stack.
Well, single stack. See, a weed burner, you're not forcing the exhaust up and out against the air. So a weed burner single is okay, but whenever you're going from bulls to a single, you're going to gain about 75 degrees exhaust temp. So I would say don't do it.
Okay, though. All right, okay. Well, my other question was about the oil sample.
Yeah, go ahead. I've got it here in front of me.
Yeah, I just had but I put a new exhaust manifold on one of the Pittsburgh Power ones, but I had the head manifold leaking, and it was pushing exhaust back into the antifreeze. So they cleaned it out, repaired it. He said they took off about 3,000 off the head, but it wasn't. The cylinder liners were all good and everything. My question is, I've got potassium in that oil, and also my iron went up. Now, this oil, I did not change it, and I had 30,000 miles on this oil when I had this head work done.
All right, Bruce, I'll tell you what we've got for numbers here, and you guys jump in and see what you might think. Potassium and sodium are climbing, but they're not horrible. But they're definitely, there's an increase in both potassium and sodium. So we're getting a small amount of coolant from somewhere, and iron was actually pretty high for only having 30,000 miles on this oil. Iron was at 73.
I would change that oil in a heartbeat. I would never, ever pull a head off a truck and clean a block. You're using sandpaper whenever you do that, and emery paper, and wire wheels, and the oil, the dirt can go down into the oil passages. By all means, change that oil every time you're doing a head gasket job.
Okay. All right.
Okay?
All right, yeah. All righty. On a sidebar on that oil, what do y'all charge to do that oil cleaning or motor cleaning where you exchange oil and all that stuff?
That's $350.
Okay. Because depending on what kind of load I can get, I might come through there next week and see if I can get y'all lined up. I'm up in Connecticut this week.
Okay. We can do that for you, and that's a good idea. And that's really a good idea after you've had a head off, is to get that engine washed out.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You know, I also noticed, Bruce, now that we were talking about having the head off, silicon just about doubled as well. So it's a good idea to get that oil out of there and get this thing cleaned up some. Let's. I think we've got Troy back here. Let's try that again. Troy in Seattle, it's your turn.
Yeah, hey, this is actually George. Just read Bruce's article in the Tim Four magazine for March regarding the new maintenance program that you guys are going to have for the Cummins ISX engine. I was wondering if he'd like to comment more on that.
Well, why don't we let Ethan comment on that, because Ethan's part of the engineering team that developed that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the idea behind it is to, you know, extend the intervals in which you have a unplanned failure there. The parts, you know, as we know, are subject to lots of soot and heat, And that's probably the number one thing that is their demise there. When the soot clog, you know, the little orifices where the sensors take the readings, you no longer get, you know, an accurate reading. And the less accurate your reading is, and the more, you know, erroneous the readings are there, so sporadic jumping around, the engine's going to attempt to do what it sees. You know, it only knows what it sees, and so we can make it, you know, see better, then it'll, you know, be more efficient.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate in having a good engine which has no fuel dilution and no soot in the oil. So, but I know that if I don't stay on top of this engine, it can get away from me very quickly.
Yeah, most certainly.
That's a good idea. Preventative maintenance will always extend the life of everything.
Yeah, because I bought this truck used, and I had the turbo overspeed sensor go out on me, and then somebody replaced the seventh injector incorrectly, and that became carbonized on me. And so those are the only two issues that I have had, and I just, you know, figure if I can get it into you guys and you work your magic and clean the engine out, that you were just talking about, that those are some of the things that I want to do.
Good. Try to give us a week's notice if you can. Sometimes
okay.
3 days of work too, okay?
All right, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Thanks for the call. Let's, you know what, we're coming up on the break again, so we'll run us into the break here, and we'll come back and get to more of your calls and questions right around the corner. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Always something new happening. If you want to stay informed about what we've got going on here and also what all of our partners are doing as well. So all of the companies we partner with, including Pittsburgh Power, as we develop new ideas, new products, new techniques, we will let you know and keep you up to date on those if you're on our list. And we have a couple ways you can do that. You can get on our email list by going to letstruck.com. Look at the bottom left. You'll see a sign up for our newsletter there. And you can stay on our text message list as well. So every time we're doing a show, a recording, a podcast, whatever it might be, we'll shoot a text message out to your phone and let you know that you can join us. So the newsletter's easy, letstruck.com. Look in the bottom left corner, sign up there. The text message is easy as well, so grab your phone or grab something to write with, and I'll tell you how to do that. Just like you would send a text message to anybody, open up your text message. Instead of a phone number, you're going to put in what's called a short code. And that short code is 99,000. So put in 99000. And then in the body of the text, just put the word listen. Don't worry about capitals or anything else. Just type the word listen. Hit send. Wait about 30 seconds. You should get a response that lets you know you're in our system. And then when we're doing anything, we'll shoot a text message out to you, and you can join us. Stick around. We'll be right back with more questions. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We have lots and lots of callers on the line. The calls are flooding in, but questions, we have some room. But you want to jump in quick. If you've got questions for Pittsburgh Power, if you press 1 on your phone right now, we might be able to get to you still. And if you have general questions for the second hour, press 1 on your phone as well, and we'll start lining those up. So question you've got, press 1. If you do it quickly, we'll be able to get to you. So here we go.
Hello?
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We've got the crew from Pittsburgh Power helping us out today, and we're going to get to your calls and questions. This time we are off to Oklahoma. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Better tax yesterday there, Kevin.
Absolutely. What's on your mind today?
Listen, I got a problem, and I made the mistake of asking people over the CB, so I got everything from bat injectors to blinker fluid. I was pulling off of a scale at a place I was loading. Got a little bit of dogginess in the throttle, but it was only that one time, and it has repeated itself several times since at a very low speed, and to compound on top of that, got heavy, heavy, heavy white smoke at startup and light smoke after it warms up, and I have not had the chance to get an oil sample just yet.
Any ideas, guys? An oil sample is a great idea. It always gives us a clue as to what's going on with the engine, but anything without having an oil
sample?
First
of all, which engine, what year, and what kind of truck?
Sorry, I meant to say that. I really did. International Detroit 11.1 liter, 1997 and a half.
Do you have the fast fuel system on it?
I do not have the fast fuel system, no, sir.
That flutter that you heard was probably just an accumulation of air passing through your fuel system. And the fast fuel system would eliminate that.
Okay.
Now,
so,
you said you have a white smoke issue.
Yes, sir.
Are you mechanically inclined?
I can do pretty light stuff. If it's tearing down a header or something like that, I can't. No, sir.
Yeah. Well, pull the turbo, pull the exhaust manifold off, plug the turbo feed line, start it up when it's cold and see which cylinders it is, and you may have a bad injector or two, and that's the easiest way to see, or start it up when it's cold and take your fingers and feel the exhaust ports. Feel 1 and 6 together, 2 and 5, and 3 and 4, and the one, the sister cylinder, like 6 is the sister to 1, 5 is to 2, and 3 is to 4. The one that's colder out of the two can also be your one with the problem.
All right. And okay. When I feel the colder, that's an indication of a bad turbo
bad injectors might not be atomizing the fuel.
Okay. All right. Well, I will do that then. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, come on. Bruce, that's old school stuff there.
Yeah, how about that? And I'll tell you another old school one way to find the miss if your engine is hot. Get a bucket of water and two rags and wet number 1 and 6, wet 2 and 5, and 3 and 4 as the engine's idling. Keep in mind, when you first touch them, that water is just going to sizzle right off. But as you keep touching them, the one that is the weak cylinder or the cylinder with the miss will stay wetter longer than its sister cylinder. So if 3 stays wetter longer than 4, it's number 3 that has the problem. If it's 5 stays wetter longer than 2, it's number 5. And you just have to keep wetting down that manifold. And the manifold will get cool enough that you'll be able to tell the difference on how the water is evaporating off. And the one that stays wetter longer is the one that's the problem.
Wait a minute. A bucket and rags. Where do I plug in the computer?
Exactly.
Not everybody can have an Ethan and a Leroy now. So
I keep looking in the bucket, but I can't find the code.
Even we go to the computer too quickly lately. It's funny. There'll be a mechanical problem or a simple old problem, and we're looking for the code or we're looking for something on the computer to tell us what it is. But easy
yeah,
to fall into.
Good stuff. There are still mechanical problems on engines, and we need to know how to find the mechanical parts. So I love that. Great advice, guys. Let's go to Ohio. Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. This is an Ethan problem and Leroy problem, I think, okay? 2014 Volvo with a DDEC 13. Took it in, and they replaced coolant pressure.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Let's clarify something there. DDEC is
okay.
Detroit Diesel Electronic Controls. You mean a D13, so a Volvo engine.
Right, a Volvo engine. Yes, my bad.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Okay. Took it in because I had a code. It was the coolant pressure sensor. They replaced it. Okay. Plus the EGR, and replaced the DPF filter. Came out of the shop, drove it 10 miles. It was fine. Parked it. Went the next day. There was a puddle of water under it. I'm sorry, puddle of coolant under it. Started the cup, and boom, guess what? That code came back. Took it right back to Volvo. They said, we forgot to clear out the code. So they cleared out the code, drove it another 10, 15 miles. It was fine, okay?
Well,
took off.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
Let's go back a second.
Okay.
I get where they could say we forgot to clear out the code. What did they say about the puddle of coolant?
Oh, they forgot to tighten the gas clamp.
Okay, so they fixed that, too.
Yeah, they fixed that, too. Okay.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Took off, drove 10, 15 miles. It was fine. No engine light. Everything was fine. Parked it. Took off on Sunday. Drove 10 miles. And guess what? Same code came up. And the check engine light came back on. We have a system in our truck called that taps us right into the Volvo Action Center that we can call. Okay. And they can get into our ECM and see what's going on. They said, oh, that code just needs to be cleared again. And they couldn't answer my question as to why that code would keep popping in if it isn't anything, right? Also, the Volvo Action Center told me they couldn't answer my question because I asked about the truck being able to do a regen while the engine light's on. They weren't sure about that. And I can't take it anywhere but to a Volvo. And I'm just not happy with them, and I feel like I'm getting the runaround. So I need to be able to point them, and I need to get aggressive and point them in the right direction on where to go.
Do you have to run California? Why don't you let Volvo have that truck and just build yourself a glider kit? Get away from those problems.
Okay.
That would drive me insane if I had that happen like that.
Right.
I can't take reoccurring problems. I like the saying, simplicity is the essence of elegance.
Right.
And, wow.
And I know that this probably has nothing to do with it. It's just a coincidence. But the driver's side headlight keeps burning out. Well, quits working about every 2 weeks, like clockwork, for a month now.
Ethan, do you want to fix this one?
On the Volvo engine part, we don't see too many of them there, but the only time that the check engine light comes on is when the ECM sees the parameter go outside the range that it wants to see. And by the sounds of it, they changed the sensor on your coolant pressure there. And what I'm thinking is you actually have high pressure. There's a couple ways that can happen. Like if the EGR cooler was leaking, some exhaust back into pushing pressure into the coolant system. the head gasket issue could also cause that.
Okay.
Will
the truck regen, though, with a check engine light on?
I don't know if that check engine light is going to disable it. I wouldn't think it would, being it's not part of the system.
Okay.
Ethan, do you think they could have a possible leaky?
We'll come back to it right after this, and we'll see what we can do. As we're heading into the break, Karen, here's the problem. You're facing two big uphill battles. The emission engines we know are difficult, and you have one of the emission engines that isn't as popular, and you're stuck with a dealer network that, in my opinion, for service, sucks. I've said that about Volvo for a couple decades now, but we'll see if we can get you some ideas. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the final segment. We're going to get to as many Pittsburgh Power questions as we can. And then we're going to come back and do a second hour of general questions. So don't hang up at the end of this, and we'll come back and do some more. I'll keep you updated on where we are as we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I've got the crew here from Pittsburgh Power today, and we were talking with Karen. We're going to get back to that right now. So, Bruce, go ahead. You had a question.
Yeah, John just mentioned to me, walked into my office, and said that he thinks he could have a possible head gasket failure. John, do you want to elaborate on that?
No, John's there. I forgot to press the button. John, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Okay. Hey, like we were talking earlier about good old-fashioned solutions or diagnosis rather than leaning on the computer, we have found sometimes recently that it's not just a sensor or a wiring problem. You really do have a problem, and the computer is doing its job and telling you that. So Volvo dealer there ought to do a test on that thing for compression in the cooling system. I would think that thing may very well have a blown head gasket.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, guys. I so appreciate it.
That
you're welcome.
Gives you a direction to go in, because obviously what they're doing, only addressing the code and clearing it, dealing just with the sensors, isn't working. So this is a great next step. Let's go to Tennessee. Jason, welcome to the program.
And thanks for taking my call. I got a new truck on order. It's going to be a Freightliner, and it's going to be coming with the 2017 DD13. And I was curious what kind of modifications you guys would be able to do to this newer engine to help me get some better gas mileage and improve the engine overall.
Oh, that's a tough one. Why don't we start out with the fleet air filter, the fast fuel system, and then we'll look and see if the power box will help on that engine also. And maybe some calibration issues. We may be able to do some recalibration, but, we're talking about a 2017, and we see very few 2016, so let's...
Jason, let me ask you another question that might be more important. How long have you been in the industry?
3 years.
Okay. And why are you buying a brand new 2017? What's the number one reason to order this particular truck?
Well, I do run California a lot, like probably every week, back and forth, coast to coast. I'm ordering instead of getting what they had on the lot because I wanted disc brakes and a couple of different things that they didn't have on the trucks on the lot.
What's the price on this thing?
It's going to have a custom sleeper and a few extras, so it's going to be about $185.
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of freight are you pulling? What kind of revenue per mile?
It's $135 per mile. And that's with the company we're at now. We'll probably be making a move to Landstar. We're hauling government freight. I expect that rate to go up quite a bit if we make the move over.
Okay, so let's address a couple. I know you were calling mostly about mechanical, but I'm just hearing some real business issues in there. I will tell you, you will go broke at $1.35 a mile with a $185,000 truck. That could become a potential maintenance nightmare. I mean, we see it happen all the time. These trucks can get really expensive. You've got one of the less common engines. I like the 13-liter, the DD13, but it's just less common. So you're going to find fewer and fewer people who understand, you know, the intricacies of that engine. And you're talking about a move to Landstar, which I think would be a great move. But if you go to Landstar, you'll have total control, and you could just stay out of California completely. You have 47 other states to run in, and California's just not that important. So I think if you were to look long-term at what you're doing, if you're going to move to Landstar for $185,000, Bruce, what kind of glider could you build in with a budget like that?
Well, we could build them a beautiful Caterpillar in a W9 or a T660 or in a 386 or a 389
just
with an 18-speed,
I think,
264
you know,
gears.
And look, you know, with the project that they're working on with the DPF, that glider could be made California legal as well.
You have an engine with zero emissions and zero problems.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the bigger issue here is really reconsidering that purchase. And I think we lost Jason. I don't know if he didn't like my advice or we lost the call. Hopefully he takes that into account, though. Let's go to Missouri. Damon, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. What can we help you with today? Yep.
Yeah, I just have two quick questions. One, I try to stay up. I got a 2008 Peterbilt, you know, with a Cat 15 A-Cert DPF. And I want to know how bad is it putting the biodiesel fuel into the system? And should I stay away from all additives? Because, you know, I listen to, you know, older truckers who don't even have the DPF system say they always put the Lucas upper cylinder in, lubricant in, and, you know, so I does that. But I want to know, you know, how do you all feel about, you know, the biodiesel going into the DPF system and then with the Lucas additive?
Well, I'm a fan of Lucas products. So I'll talk about that, but I want to hear what Kevin has to say about the biodiesel with the DPF, because I don't have any comment on that.
Yeah, I'll jump in with what we're hearing feedback from people, and maybe you guys have noticed something in the shop itself. I think one of the biggest problems we see with biodiesel is inconsistency. There's a wide spectrum of how this stuff is produced, what it's produced from, and we get reports all over the board. Some people love it. They say their engine runs better. They get better fuel economy, although that seems to be happening less and less. I think the quality of biodiesel may be getting worse, and the consistency is worse, my general advice is, because we can't ever seem to predict what you're getting in biodiesel, to stay away from it when it's possible. Sometimes anymore, it seems pretty difficult to get away from it.
Yeah, it is. Just like I'm at the Petro in Oak Grove, and, you know, I haven't been here in a while, but, you know, this is one of the few places in Missouri along 70 that did not have it. I go to the fuel pump.
Yeah.
I'm about 100 gallons into it, and I see that blue sticker on there. I say, oh, wow, you know. But
we're not seeing horrible problems, but we do see some issues, and it just seems to be very inconsistent.
Okay, but your main suggestion is avoid it as much as possible.
If you can, yeah. When you have the option of getting non-bio, I would get non-bio.
Okay, now what about the additives in general? And like I say, you know, I've always, I only been doing this 6 years, but, you know, from guys who have been doing it longer than me, they say that Lucas upper cylinder lubricant, you know, a must-have in the fuel tanks. But I'm hearing that with the DPF system, you know, don't put anything in. You know, which way should I go with that?
I would continue to use the Lucas fuel conditioner, because diesel fuel, like gasoline today, is very dry. The clearance in a barrel and plunger in an injector is only 40 millionths. And it needs diesel fuel on the top side to keep it lubricated and engine oil on the bottom side. I'm sorry, diesel fuel on the bottom side, engine oil on the top side. So I would continue to run Lucas, and I run it in all of my diesel pickup trucks, every tank full. I use the winter blend
in
the wintertime.
I'll jump in with a general recommendation on additives and how I feel, because we're coming into the end of the show here. Additives, when you have a specific reason why you're doing it and you know the additive will fix it. Just like Bruce just mentioned, we could use more lubricity in the fuel. This product addresses that specific problem. The idea of general additives, whether they're fuel or oil, fuel additives are not going to improve your fuel economy, so don't use them for that reason. Don't buy these crazy expensive $100, you know, a gallon additives. They're junk. And oil additives only when we're addressing a very specific problem. Otherwise, a lot of the stuff is just hype. Thanks, guys. We will. We always run out of time here, but we'll come back and do it again next week. If you want to get a hold of Pittsburgh Power directly, give them a call. Check out their website as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to get to a second hour of general questions. If you had a specific Pittsburgh Power question on the line, I will get to those and do my best to answer them as well. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. You know, if you've been listening to the show for any time, really, I talk about having a mission, having a purpose. You know, I talk about having goals, and goals are really important, and get those goals in writing. But your goals should feed into a bigger mission or your purpose. And very few people in life ever take the time to figure out what their purpose is. We can have multiple purposes in life. The ones we tend to talk about around here are around business. This is a show mostly about business, but you can have a personal mission and a mission around your health or your relationships or your family. My business mission I've always been very clear about, and that is, in general, your mission should be clear and concise and short. You should be able to explain your purpose to somebody in a couple sentences, and then you should be able to talk about it for hours. But my mission in a couple sentences is to make the trucking industry a better place to live and work. That's a pretty big, broad, bold mission, but that's what I've been doing for a couple decades. Now, there it is in a sentence or two, but I could talk about it for hours. And I'm always looking, what can I be doing to make the industry a better place to live and work? And I've identified something, and it's not something new. I've been talking about this for a while. But the more I look at it, the more research I do, the more people I talk to, I think there is a part of the industry right now that has almost no upside for the individual driver and has lots and lots of downside. I've been pretty outspoken against this in the past, but I think I'm going to be even more outspoken. The more I look at it, the more I see that we really need to get better information out about the lease purchase programs. I think they are a big part of the downfall of the industry itself. I really do. And if you look at why carriers like these programs, it makes total sense. There are lots and lots of upside for the carrier, but the carrier's not my market. I really don't care about the carriers. I care about drivers. That's how we're going to make this industry better, by making things better for the driver and the owner-operator and creating better opportunities. And we've made it sound like, the industry has made it sound like, these lease purchase programs are opportunities. They're not. They're traps. From the carrier side, real quick, if you look at the biggest cost carriers face and the biggest amounts of risk, remember, being successful in business is about reducing risk and reducing cost. So when you look at the carrier's biggest risk and biggest cost, you have employees. They're a big cost, and they're a big risk. You have fuel, big cost, and there is a risk there because fuel prices fluctuate a lot, so it's hard to plan. And another huge risk is the truck itself. Prices have gone up. Trucks are really expensive now, and trucks are lots and lots of maintenance problems. They are a maintenance nightmare these days. So in one easy program, the carrier eliminates three of their biggest sources of risk and three of their biggest costs. The minute they get you to sign the lease purchase program, they no longer have any employee risk. They have no workers' comp, no Social Security, no Medicare, no unemployment, no health insurance requirements under Obamacare. All of that stuff goes away and immediately gets shifted to you. You, as the person signing that lease purchase, have just taken on all of that risk and all of that cost. Now, you would do the same thing if you owned the truck. I'm okay taking on that risk if I have enough upside to cover it. Problem is, in the lease purchase, there just isn't enough upside. Now, that's just one issue. The next one is fuel. The carrier just got rid of all that risk and all that work and cost of fuel and worrying about how do we save fuel. It's all gone for them. They no longer have to buy fuel. You do. again, I don't mind taking on that risk, but I want some control over it. I want to be able to control the equipment I buy and how I maintain it and how I upgrade it and modify it. And you can't do that in most lease purchase programs. Now, the third thing, the cost of the truck and the maintenance issues on that truck. Lease purchase programs are not going out and buying gliders. That would help tremendously with that problem, but they're not. They're buying new trucks. Newer and more untested technologies. They're very expensive, whereas if we can buy older trucks, we can get rid of that big expense. We can get rid of all that complication. The carrier, sign here, and they have just eliminated their three biggest problems, and they transferred them all to you, and you get very little control to be able to solve those problems. See, I love the owner-operator model. I love, yeah, transfer all of those risks and costs to me, but give me the ability to solve those problems. And the lease purchase does not do that. It transfers all the risk, all the cost, and gives you zero solutions to solve those problems. It is it's a huge answer for the carrier. I don't think it's a good long-term answer for them, but they're not looking long-term. It is a beautiful short-term answer for the carrier. It's horrible in the short-term for the driver and in the long-term. There's just no upside to these things. But there's not enough good information in the industry. There's a lot of myths. There's a lot of misconceptions. There's just a lot of really, really bad information or no information. And I am making it my mission to make available better information. I'm not here to make anybody's decision. If you want to sign one of these, if you're in one and you want to stay in it, knock yourself out. Absolutely. I don't have a problem with that. But be informed. That's where I see the problem. Guys aren't tracking their costs. They don't know how much they're making in these programs. They don't have good information. And they're making decisions on very poor information. My job, the way I see it, is to provide better information, and then you make the decision. I want to read something from one of my favorite authors. Now, this isn't an author that I really recommend a lot for owner-operators because most of his material is really about marketing. But I think I'm going to start talking about it and recommending it more because we're all marketers. We're all marketing ourselves, our services, our ideas. And I really would encourage you to read more. Even if you listen or read one of these books and you don't see how it directly affects you in trucking, keep listening. I think this is one of the most brilliant authors around right now. And his name is Seth Godin. I have talked about his books, but not a lot. He's got a lot of really, really good books. I happen to have one right now that I like. It's titled, What to Do When It's Your Turn. And it's always your turn. Great. And it's almost put together more like a magazine than a book. You don't necessarily have to read it from start to finish. You could open up any page and there's a lesson. So this is the page I happen to be looking at today. And I want to read this to you and then kind of explain how it applies here. This page, the title is You've Been Hacked. People in Power. Oh, there's the music. I'm going to get to a break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to read this, explain why I think it applies in our industry right now and in our world and our country, what you can do to avoid this trap. And then we're going to get to your calls and questions. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Trouble, trouble. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. So let me read this paragraph. It's not long, but I want to apply this to the lease purchase and listen to how much sense this makes. It says, people in power have taken advantage of our glitches in our personalities and errors in our instincts to create an environment where they profit and we come out behind. Politicians count on our short attention span. Banks know that we're impulsive. Bosses exert power over us based on our fear of failing. They all fuel a culture that keeps us in hock. Now, let me apply that to a lease purchase program directly. Politicians count on our short attention span. So do carriers. Because they know the average driver today is not really digging deep and becoming educated about much of anything. Instead, they're scrolling through Facebook and social media and reading bits and pieces from people they don't really know, have no idea what their background is, and yet they might, let's apply it to the lease purchase. You scroll through, some guy on there makes a comment about he's in a lease purchase and he's doing great. That clicks, that registers. Oh, look, I see comments all the time. People say they're in a lease purchase and they're doing great. What does that mean? Who are these people? How long have they been in it? What does doing great really mean? Do they have an accounting system? Do they know how much money they're making? And what about the people who are failing over and over and over? They're not going to go on Facebook and post that they're failing. So because of our short attention span, we're now getting our information from really, really bad sources. We don't want to dig deep and do the hard work to read and learn whether these things are really good or not. I can tell you they're not. The vast majority of them are not. Banks know that we're impulsive. So do carriers, and they take it even further. I just had a caller on my last show who is going to spend $185,000 on a lease purchase truck thinking that someday he's going to own it. Odds of that are slim to none, and even if he does, there's not a lot of value in a truck that costs you that much. And yet the carriers know you're impulsive. You don't want to do the hard work. You don't want to take the time and save some money and build some credit or screw building credit, save enough cash to go buy a cheap truck. They know you won't do that. They know you'd rather just sign here and say, oh, look, I own a truck. They are taking advantage of that. Bosses and companies exert power over us based on our fear of failing. If you really create a plan, if you really take the time to do the hard work and build a plan to become an owner-operator the right way and you fail, we're afraid of that. So what? Failing is not – failing can be really good sometimes. But I can also tell you that if you give you the plan on how to become an owner-operator, step by step, and if you follow that plan, your odds of failing go way, way down. But see, it's if we jump into one of these lease purchase walk-away deals and it doesn't work and we just walk away, it doesn't feel like that big of a failure. I didn't put that much work into it. I didn't really try hard. It was all I had to do was sign and give it a try, see how it goes. So we don't feel like we're failing. We're afraid of failing. You need to change this. I am on a mission to change this because I think it is a huge part of the downfall of our industry right now. I have more to say about that, but I'm going to get to some of your calls and questions. Let's go to Texas. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. What can I help you with today?
No. It's starting to get hot down here in Texas. Any good shops you know that work on ACs that you know of?
Not in Texas, really, not in anywhere, you know, that I've dealt with recently, but I have a recommendation on what I did for years for AC work that's pretty different. Here's the interesting thing.
Okay.
That AC system that is on most trucks, some of the newer trucks are starting to get a little more complicated because there's actually some trucks where they're tying the AC system into all of our sensors and computers, and that's going to create some new problems. But most trucks aren't that way. For the most part, most trucks, the AC system on your truck is exactly the same as the AC system on a car. There's no difference. Same components, same technology, they all work the same way. So I like to take mechanical work to people who do that kind of work over and over and over and over. That's why I take my engine work to an engine shop, not a truck dealer. It's why I take my alignment work to a very specific alignment shop, not a truck dealer that does alignments. AC is the same way. So I skip truck shops completely, and I go find a good automotive AC shop that does air conditioning work all day long.
Yeah, I took it to this one guy. I live in New Orleans. I took it to this one guy in New Orleans. But he do a lot of – he don't even work on trucks. And I took it to him. He do a lot of electrical work. And he could not figure out what the problem was. I heard you talk about that before, about the shop in Florida.
Yeah,
but I run a flatbed. I can get down there. I can get anywhere pretty much.
Well, there was a chain of shops I used in Orlando for years called Ice Cold Auto Air. At least two of them, I think, are right there on the main kind of drag that runs through east and west through the center of Orlando, Route 50, which is also called, I think, Colonial Drive,
mm-hmm.
most of the way through town. They always did a great job for me. You know, I would call them ahead of time, tell them it's a truck, make sure they were okay with that. They used to do all my AC work. Now, do you think you've got an electrical problem with the AC?
Yeah, I got all kinds of problems. The AC in the bulk, you can cut it off about 5 minutes, and then it cuts everything off. It cuts the air off in the front. The lines on the firewall, they're freezing up. And I don't know what's going on with it. Even if I
start
the heater on right
shop.
Now, the lines will freeze up. The compressor just stays on.
Yeah. The fact that it's freezing up, I would start with an AC shop. If it turns out to be an electrical issue, they still at least have a really good idea of what components will be affecting it. So, I this is a good strategy. There's no question I use this for years. Doesn't mean every time we do it, it's going to work. But your odds are better. Because when you go to a truck dealer, the guy who's working on your air conditioning, he might not have worked on air conditioning in the last 30 days. He was doing engines, he was doing tires, he was doing something on the interior, he was replacing who knows what. I mean, I would rather have somebody who does nothing but air conditioning work day in and day out, all day long. Our odds are better. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, but that is still my strong recommendation. And like I say, I haven't worked with them, you know, since I left Orlando. But the shop that I use down there, like Ice Cold Auto Air, they always did a great job for me. Let's go to Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Fairytex Now.
Absolutely. What's on your mind today?
I actually have a question about the Fairytex.
Okay.
I was discussing it with the person and explaining the prebate side of things. And she asked me a question, and I kind of was understanding where she was coming from. She said, would this eliminate welfare and other government subsidies with the prebate?
No.
No. Okay. Because
no.
I had a second
no,
to think
not...
about it. I'm like, I'm not 100% sure, so I did some more research, but...
Yeah, it's not meant to, and I'll explain why. So if we look at our current system of welfare, food stamps, and tax, so you have somebody who is receiving welfare, they're receiving food stamps. If they're not working at all and they're receiving those things, then their tax situation is virtually meaningless. they're really not being taxed because they really don't have any income to be taxed on. They're not getting any benefit back from the tax system. It's just kind of neutral. But if you have somebody in the lower income brackets who may be receiving some assistance in the form of food stamps and maybe some welfare, but they're also working. Now, they're getting an earned income credit. They're actually getting money back from the tax system that they never put in. It's almost a form of welfare through the tax system. So when we come back, I'm going to get to a break. When we come back, I'll kind of compare that. Nothing is really going to change all that much. The fair tax is not designed to be a welfare system at all. The prebate is just designed to make sure nobody gets taxed on the basics of life and living. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Before the break, I was talking with John in Minnesota. So, John, here's the idea behind the prebate, and this was all it was meant to do. Because we are switching from an income tax where we're taxed on the money that we earn to a consumption tax where we're taxed on the money we spend, that's the big difference between the two systems, they wanted to make it as fair as possible so that nobody from the lowest wage earner to the highest or people who have no income, they wanted to make sure that nobody paid tax on what they consumed just to live. So they set a number and it says, look, it, at the very minimum, in order to pay rent, utilities, food, basic needs just to survive, we're not going to tax that. You're going to get all of those things tax-free. Now, some people said, well, then you should just make those items not taxable. But that gets very complicated to do it that way. And what it opens up is a lot of lobbying for industries and companies and groups to say, but wait a minute, our product, our service is necessary, so it should be tax-exempt. And then we end up with the same mess we have now, everybody lobbying to get some sort of an exemption. Instead of doing that, the prebate just says, look, no exemptions, no lobbying, we're not going to complicate this. We're just going to credit you back that amount of tax every month, and we're going to credit it back to everybody. We don't care if you make $1 billion a year or you make zero and you're on government assistance. Nobody will pay tax on what it costs to live, and we'll keep it simple. We'll just credit it back to you. But it doesn't give anybody enough money that we would be able to replace welfare or food stamps or the other assistance programs.
Okay, that answers my question. Yep, that answers that question. And then I'm looking for a comment from a BreakSafe user who has been up in the snowy weather and wondering how well BreakSafe works in the snowy conditions and the ice buildups on the brakes. So if anybody could comment on that.
Got it. I'll give you a quick heads up on the. So we have two kind of components to the BreakSafe that we talk about. The BreakSafe itself and then the AeroLogger. The BreakSafe itself really wouldn't be affected in any way by this. It's possible, yep. I guess, the AeroLogger could be. If you got a little bit of snow and ice buildup, the AeroLogger may or may not move freely. I haven't heard any feedback. I wrote this down, and I'll talk to Andy about it. But the brake safe itself, absolutely not. There'd be no negative there. But the aero logger, maybe. It would be pretty easy, you know, clean off the accumulation. And it wouldn't be any kind of a long-term negative impact. It would be just right then at the moment. But we'll also throw it out there and see if we can get some feedback from some others. Let's go to California. Edwin, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good.
Hello.
What can I help you with today?
Yeah. I'm a new driver. Well, not new. I've been driving for like 5 years now, but I'm saving to buy a truck. But I heard you talking about, pre-admission and all this stuff. So I'm kind of holding out on that and see what you think, because I live in California, so that's changed the whole game. So,
well, that's easy to fix. Just move.
So that's the thing. My wife's family is from there, so I would have moved a long time ago, but I have to operate from there until I can convince my wife to move out of state.
So let me give you some options. And I'm really, really serious about this, and people kind of flip out when I say some of these things, but business is serious. Business is risky. Business can also be really, really rewarding if we are willing to make some sacrifices, do some hard work. The payback to me is worth every bit of it when you do it right. But I will also tell you that I started my trucking business in Ohio, and all of my Ohio, and all of Lisa's family is from Ohio. And I looked around and found all kinds of reasons why running my trucking business in Ohio didn't make a lot of sense. I had employees in Northeast Ohio with unions and everything else were outrageously expensive. Maintenance cost was high. There was all kinds of things. And I looked at my business and my bottom line and I said, taxes were crazy in Ohio. Not only did we have a state tax, but we had a local tax. And I said, what could I do? Where could I move my business to make it more profitable? And I looked all over. I was willing to move anywhere in the country that increased my odds of being successful. And I found Florida. No state income tax, no local income tax. Wages were lower, so it was easy to pay drivers really well, better than the average, and make them very happy and give them a good opportunity in Florida. Maintenance costs were much lower because of the weather being so good all year long and not dealing with the snow and the ice and the salt and, you know, all of those problems. If I kept the trucks in the southeast, there were virtually no hills, so fuel economy was better. Those things might seem minor, but all of those things add up, and my business became much more profitable after making that move. And we did move away from our families. That was just part of it. It all depends on how willing you are to sacrifice things and how serious you are about being successful. If I lived in California, I would take some pretty drastic measures or I would move. Here's another option. How close are you to a border of another state? Oh, I lost Edwin. So I'm not going to get too deep into that because I wanted to ask him some questions. So that's my general idea about sacrifice for business. If you're serious about succeeding, you have to make sacrifices. If you want to be different than other people, you have to be willing to do things they're not willing to do. That's just the real hard truth about life. Let's go to Kentucky. Julius, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Well, I'm in a lease. I'm not in a lease purchase. It's a one-year lease. I'm nearing the end of it, and at the end of it, I get a completion bonus. I've been saving my money. I don't have any bills. We've got our home paid off, and I'm tired of giving away all my money. I think I'm ready to go out on my own.
Good.
I found a company that will allow me to run underneath their number, and they take 10%, which seems they do all my paperwork, which I think is pretty fair.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to source me a truck. I've been pulling vans my whole career, and with this lease, I started out, you know, doing the specialized, and I found out I love it. You know, this is for
me.
So I'm looking at, you know, conventional trucks. I know I'm going to lose a little fuel mileage. I'm okay with that. I think I can, if I can make it in from what I've been doing here, I can sure make it on my own. You know, I'm getting 65% of the BOL right now. So,
right.
And I've got a high truck payment. I've been in the shop so many times, it's ridiculous. I had a 99 Volvo with a Series 60, and the company told me that I could bring it over, but once I got there with it, they wouldn't approve it. They wouldn't approve the truck. It had too many miles. It's too old. Passed DOT inspection at the TA, but for their company said it wouldn't pass DOT, which I know was... You know, they just wanted, they got what they wanted. I jumped in a truck.
Well, so. Yeah, because that's a stupid answer. Because here's the thing. Even if it didn't pass DOT, so tell me what didn't pass and we'll just fix it. There's nothing
that
you can't fix on a DOT. Come on. We all know this. We could all pull brand new trucks with 50,000 miles on them and find something that might fail a DOT. We just fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. The three trucks that I'm looking at, you know, the W9, the 379, and of course the Freightliner Classic.
Okay, hold that thought. Let me get to this break and we'll come right back and we'll talk about that. Stick around. We've got more stuff right around the corner. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We are heading off back to Kentucky. Julius, go ahead.
Yeah. The trucks that I've been looking at, they have, you know, some of them have the Detroit Series 60 and two engines that I'm, you know, that's the only engine I'm familiar with. The other two that I'm seeing a lot of in the trucks I'm looking for is Cat C15 and a 3406, and the Freightliners have the MBE 4000 Mercedes. And I'm not familiar with
what. Let's first clarify something. What year of trucks are we looking at here?
That's another thing I wanted to ask you. All the way up to 2009, but they still have
no.
Still have the okay.
No. No, no, and no.
Okay.
Look, I'm not going to fight you about the Classic. I think you understand it. You said it. You know it's going to cost you in fuel. You're willing to deal with that. As long as you're making an informed decision, I would never do it, but that's okay. We'll skip that because that's not as important as this next issue. And this is a drop-dead absolute for me. There's no leeway on this one. I will not own an engine newer than 04. And I can't recommend it to anybody else. Those are the engines we have all the problems with. That I want to avoid those engines at all costs. I will not own one. Not until we get to the point where we can solve the problems that we have, and we're not there yet. So, having said that, the now what you're looking at, if we go pre-04, and we even have to be a little careful with some 03 engines. So if you're in that 03, 04 range, be very careful that it is a non-EGR, non-ACERT engine. Then what we're really looking at, I have three engines. Yeah, I had, what's that?
The difference. So I thought that all cats were non-emission. I was under
Oh, absolutely not. What the reason some people believe that is because people say cats don't have EGR. That's correct. They don't. They have ACERT. They just use the different technology. So any cat engine after 03, 04 is an emission engine. So we avoid those. MBE, the Mercedes engine, off your list completely, whether it's emission or non, you just don't want it. It's just not a good engine. You don't want to deal with it. Instead of telling you what engines not to get, I'm going to tell you exactly three engines to look for. Series 60, you can't go wrong with. You're already familiar with that. The cat prior to the bridge engine or the C15 or the ACERT, a cat 6NZ or 3406E, the electronic version, as long as you're not going past earlier than like 96 on a cat, you're going to be okay. Detroit, you could go all the way back to the early 90s. And they had great electronic engines way back in the early 90s. Cummins and Cat, about the mid-90s is when they started with electronics. So towards the late 90s, theirs were getting better. So Series 60, pre-emission Cat like a 6NZ, and a Cummins N14. Those are the three engines I want to look for. Now you're also looking at high mileage, late 90s, early 2000 trucks. That's the market you're in, but I'm okay with that. We can fix all those things. We can upgrade things. We can replace them. We can rebuild them. But we're going to get simple trucks that we know how to fix, get good fuel economy, and don't give us all of those problems and all that cost. So start looking in that area. I would focus on 98 to 2002 vehicles with one of those three engines. Look at them and then call me back. You're probably going to have some more questions, and I'll help you out with those. Let's go to Tennessee. Jason, welcome to the program.
Yes, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I lost you during the power hour. I was going through a bad area. I'm the guy that's buying the $185,000 truck.
Yes, I'm glad you're back.
Okay.
Where were we?
You were definitely trying to talk me out of the 17 emissions truck, and I agree with you 100%. I know exactly where you stand on these engines. Unfortunately, California is a must for us. You know, we love vacationing out there. We
got it. Got it.
And
so
the
let's
number
go to
I
the
told
next.
You the dollar. I'm
Let's
sorry,
go to
the
next
number,
option.
The dollar? Okay.
Let's go to the next option, because I get it. There are some people that have looked at it and said, you know, we're just going to stay in California. We're going to deal with it. That's okay.
Yeah.
If I made that decision, I'd love California too. Why not a glider with the DPF?
Main reason is my wife can't drive a 10-speed. I've never driven one, but I'm pretty confident I can do it. My wife, I'm not so confident on it. You know, it's
sure
pretty
can.
Confusing. I
sure
feel she can, but
can she walk and chew gum at the same time?
That's questionable sometimes.
Oh boy, does she listen to the show? You're in trouble now.
No, she don't listen that much. She's standing behind me though. She can hear me. She just punched me. So
yeah, I'll bet. Look, driving a 10-speed is fun. Seriously, it's not that hard. It requires a little bit of practice. People are afraid of it because we're afraid of the unknown. We think it's complicated. honestly, all you need to do, take a couple days off, go find a truck somewhere with a 10-speed or a 13-speed or an 18-speed. Even those aren't that complicated. They just look like it until you understand the 13 and the 18 adds one more button, and you don't even have to use it if you don't want to. I drive 13 speeds and 18 speeds all the time, and if I'm light enough, I drive them just like a 10-speed. You just ignore the other button. But get a 10-speed, go play around with learning how to double shift and clutch, and it's fun, and we should know how to do those things. And honestly, I will tell you, for both of you, once you learn how to do it, it feels like an accomplishment. It's one more thing that you know how to do, and it's really not that difficult. It's just a skill, and you can learn it, and once you do, you'll be glad you did. And aren't you going to feel at least a little silly if you go buy one of these trucks because you don't want to learn how to drive a 10-speed, and it turns out to be one of those $30,000 or $40,000 maintenance nightmare trucks that they can't fix?
Yeah. I believe me, that's my biggest fear in this. You know, another issue with the glider is we got to have a long wheelbase. We're a straight truck, expediter truck. So trying
not
to
a
get
problem.
A glider truck with the long wheelbase, 33,000, so we only need single axle. Peterbilt only does 288, which is the glider truck I would want, the 386, but they won't build a long enough wheelbase for a two-axle truck. So I've gone through, hold on.
You're the one with the $185,000 budget, right?
Yes.
Everything. When we've got a big enough budget, everything can be fixed. There are companies that stretch frames all the time. You go buy yourself a day cab glider. You stretch the frame all you want. You put any rear end under you want. You put any box on it, any sleeper, any option, lift gates, lift axles. The list goes on and on. You guys aren't on a $10,000 budget.
Well, we don't have $180,000. We'll have $20,000 down with $20,000 to get started. So I want a glider truck.
When I say you've got a $180,000 budget, you do. That's what you're planning on spending. I don't care how you're getting it.
So if
that's your budget, what I want you to see is that money could buy you so much more if you do it the right way and build this truck, not walk into a dealer and spend $185,000 on emission problems.
I see where you're getting. I do understand it 100%, you know. I do.
You know, your original question, what can we do to the DD13? Not much.
Yeah.
It is what it is. They're getting more and more complicated.
Yeah.
And again, the DD13 and 15 are pretty similar, but they're not the same. And there aren't that many of them out there. So it adds one more layer of issues that you just don't have as many people experienced with the individual problems that engine has. So you're less likely to find somebody who can troubleshoot it when it goes wrong, and it will go wrong. I would really, really think long and hard about this. For me, it's a hands-down slam dunk. I would be building a glider, and I would overcome all the issues. They can all be overcome. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We had tons and tons of questions, so I'll give you a heads up. We're going to do this again tomorrow. call in early when we send out the text 15 minutes ahead of time. Press 1 immediately on your phone, and I promise you I'll get to you. You got to get in early. Tomorrow we're going to do an hour of Destination Health and an hour of general questions. We'll see you then. Thanks again.